and welcome to JFG Tonight. FD says Odyssey doesn't show your live videos anymore. Maybe there's an update there. I don't know. You're going to have to ask them. I see live in progress, personally. I don't know if you expect them on your featured page. I see it in my channel. Silver Spider says, he's a talented, but as an adult, I can see why people didn't want their kids to take him seriously. Talking about Eminem. Eminem had an upstanding run in his early career as a defiant agitator, but his acclaimed popularity has dwindled as he went woker. Yeah, it's quite impressive, you know, the contrast between the original Eminem albums, Marshall Mathers LP, that kind of time, and then what he's tried to remarket himself as the rap god, who can just spout a series of words the fastest. It's been very sad, because from the when I was just a little baby boy, my mama used to tell me these crazy things. She used to tell me my daddy was an evil man. She used to tell me he hated me. But then I got a little bit older and I realized she was the crazy one. That is so good. That was such an important part of my teenage years, to have it put in rap, this kind of white trash life, although I've had a good life. So I didn't need to be told that, you know, females are evil, because I've had both a good mother and a good father. So I didn't need this kind of thing in my life to give me insight in my own life. But I was seeing a world that was very anti-male in other families than my own. And it was kind of needed back in those days to have people be told there are some crazy women out there and they are messing up young white people's lives. Speaker's Corner says, more Eminem song renditions, please, JF. what are the songs of Eminem back then? My Fault. I never meant to give you mushrooms, girl. I never meant to bring you to my world. But now you're sitting in the corner crying, and now it's my fault, my fault. I never meant to give you mushroom, girls. I never meant to bring you to my world. But now you're sitting in the corner crying, and now it's my fault, my fault. I went to John's rave with Ron and Dave and met a new wave blonde babe with half of her head shaved. A nurse aide who came to get laid and tied up with first aid tape and raped on the first date. Ooh, Susan, an ex-heroin addict who just stopped using, who loved booze and alternative music. What's up? Told me she was going back into using again. I said, wait, first try this hallucinogen. It's better than heroin and the booze and the gin. Come here, let's go in here. Who's in the den? It's me and Kelly. My bad. Yeah, those were beautiful words. I mean, there's nothing like this in the modern Eminem. I'm not here to do a review of Eminem songs, but this was a better time for Eminem than the rap god stuff. And yes, the movie 8 Miles, the movie was good. The movie was good, but it was the entry of Eminem into more commercial type of productions and much less white trash, much less of the white trash stuff that I have come to expect from him. Oh my fucking god, here's a guy plunging into a pool. I mean, look at this. What the fuck? Why would you take such risks? hopefully had planned this to minimize the risk, but it's pretty pretty intense. I wouldn't do that kind of stuff. Speaker's Corner says, yes, first album was the best. Imagine counting on the fact that a Niger mob will simply remain peaceful and deciding to stay there. That's what the French diplomats have done. Now, that's what I call bad decision making. In Niger, there is this crowd, and there's, if I understand it correctly, some kind of a civil war, civil revolution of some kind, different factions fighting for control, and importantly, those having taken control of power recently, trying to kick the French out. And like, everyone in America, you guys always have this stereotype of French people leaving. But, and I expected that this would happen. Why would you stay in a country that's been taken over by violence and where you are being asked by the new powers to leave? It's like, okay, time to go. And amazingly, the French government has said, wait a minute, we can't leave. We're going to stay here because the people who have asked us to leave are not the proper people. The people who have asked us to leave, we don't recognize as true power. Bam! Okay. But now there's a whole crowd of people around the French embassy in Niger. So, and they have been peaceful. That was 24 hours ago. They had been peaceful and everything, but it's like... I would leave, guys. I don't know how long a mob of Niger can stay peaceful, but I'm astonished at the fact that they were peaceful for any second. It's time to go, guys. You won't make it if you don't leave now. Go away, says JF, says Niger with a soft G like a true Nigerian would. Yeah, I try to go by the way people call themselves. There's something in your hair, JF. Well, it's like, sorry, I hope that it's gone, but I don't see it. I don't see it on the screen. I hope it's gone. Worst case scenario, you're going to have to watch a show with something in my hair. Yesterday, Ashley Sinclair has deleted her tweet after I criticized it on the show, after I pointed to her, hey, it's misrepresenting the situation with Gad Saad. And it's like, Gad Saad has been quite dishonest in framing what is really a decision of Facebook not to allow links to Canadian news. And Gad Saad is trying to present this as censorship, and it's like, well, it's certainly not censorship by the Canadian government. It's more like Facebook deciding to censor you, but it's not really you. It's all Canadian news, and you happen to be featured in a Canadian news. All of this needed to be properly explained, because I hate it when people endorse this kind of Medal of Honor of having been censored when it's not really that. It's false. It's false credentials. How do they call it? False valor. It's a case of false valor that Gad Saad is trying to do. Because as someone pointed out yesterday on Twitter in response to all this, the idea that the priority in terms of censorship of the Canadian apparatchiks would be Gad Saad is ludicrous. It is absolutely ridiculous to be proposing that Gad Saad is a target for the woke censors of the Canadian government. And so I was happy that Ashley deleted her tweet. Now she has also unfollowed me on Twitter. She hasn't banned me. But you know, at the beginning of this interaction, I saw Ashley Sinclair is following you. and now she's not following me anymore. And in fact, she wanted to insist on the fact that it is not my critique of her tweet, nor my writing of a community note, nor my streaming about it that has influenced her to delete the tweet. She says, nobody deleted a tweet because of you. I decided to incorporate it in my video I'm filming tomorrow. You are seriously weird, though. Being seriously weird, as I pointed out yesterday, that is the damnation of the artist. Seriously weird, but right all the time for the rest of your life. That is my cross, my path of the cross. That is what I have to carry as my burden until my death. I am weird, but correct. And people were laughing their ass off because when a woman tells you, I'm doing it, but it's not because of you, she's doing it because of you. She totally deleted this tweet because let's try to make sense of this. So imagine you're a YouTuber. Now you tweet something. Now imagine that tweet, you're so proud of it. You decide to make a video about it. You're not going to delete that tweet. If you want to make a video about a tweet you've done because it's so up there, you're going to leave that tweet in because you're going to be like, hey, this tweet is so right, I should expand it into a video. You're not going to delete that tweet. What the fuck is this explanation? DK Shadow says, you're weird, JF. So weird. Weird and right. That is what I am. That is my job. And I still did it yesterday. So it sucks because I would have liked to have a community note under my belt. In a way, that is discrediting the work of us community noters, you know, because when we're really right, people end up deleting their tweet and our community note goes out the window. That is too bad. That is too bad. But I think the fact that she deleted it means I would have had a successful community note because she knew inside of hers that it was a misrepresentation of the situation with Gad Saad. Gad Saad is not being censored by the Canadian government. That is for sure. California professor retires after being accused of faking her Native American roots. Another case of Pocahontas on the run. Another Elizabeth Warren was lurking in the halls of the academia. And I said, now do Olympic woman weightlifting. How is it that she can have fake Native American roots? Can we be fake something else? Could we have a fake woman? What would be a fake woman? What is a fake Native American, really? What is it deeply? A fake Native American is someone who puts it on their CV that they're a Native American, but what is the standard by which you verify that truth? A genetic test. So a genetic test will reveal that this person has zero Native American heritage. Now, how do we transfer what we've learned here? Dear class, how do we take what we've learned and transfer it to the domain of gender? Well, you would have a woman and she would have a genetic test that would prove that she's a woman, but then a fake woman could be identified by making a genetic test, just like we've done in the Native American case. A fake woman could be identified as having the genetics of a man. And we would say, well, it's time for you to retire because you have faked your woman roots. No, but that's not how it works. Somehow we can have fake Native Americans, but we can't have fake woman. When it's gender, it's all about how the person feels and reports that they are feeling. T.S. Apostolos says, have you gotten a sense how Twitter impressions compared to YouTube or anything. Tucker/Trump has 261 million views impressions and is 46 minutes long. For these very high numbers, it's probably a third of them that are actual views. For my kind of numbers, which is lower, it's about half of them. Half of the impressions are views, and about 10 to 20% in my case end up being views up to the end of the video. I suspect, because I've seen this phenomenon on my account, those are the numbers if we're talking about a video that hasn't attracted much attention and it's mostly my user base and you get more viewing. But when I had videos that were reaching 300K, 500K impressions, or millions of impressions, then it was more trending toward the third rather than half. So, of course, that's understandable. You end up being on more feeds, but it's people who are less interested, who don't know your face, and they're less interested at clicking on the video. So those are my estimations. Basically, if you have 250 million on a video of Trump or Tucker, I would expect it to be about one third of the views converted into actual listening. And I would expect perhaps less than 10% making it through a 46-minute long. Because even shorter video, it hovers around the 10%, 20%, depending if it's a small viewership. But as you get into high impression counts, you're going to get more people not interested at watching it through the end. But among the people who don't watch it through the end, it's not like a total loss. Many of them will watch a couple of minutes and then it spreads. Some of them will make it to the 10-minute mark. Some of them make it to the 15-minute mark. And it kind of spreads relatively linearly for the rest. Once you're 3 minutes in, you have a linear relationship. But the first block is not linear in the sense that you lose a lot of people when you convert from impression to listening at all. And then within the first minute, you lose another big chunk of people, and then it flattens. Maybe less than 10% for a long video. I tend to publish clips below the 30 minutes. I try to, but sometimes I have just a subject that I've taken a long time to explain on my show. And in that case, it can reach 40, 45 minutes. All right, point to the exact location where yellow becomes green here. So this guy is probably trying to make the case that, see, race doesn't exist, or he was responding to a racist snob, trying to make the case that because you can't quite see where the transition from green to yellow happens, therefore race doesn't make sense. But the Tsar Apu has the right reply to this. He says, you can't, therefore there is no difference between yellow and green. That is the continuum fallacy. It's not because you can't point to a border that is categorical and that says everything to the left of this is green, everything to the right of this is yellow. Even if the border is blurred, there is definitely a difference between green and yellow. And that difference is at the basis of race. Race is the definition of an extreme categorical, with the recognition that there can be infinite amounts of breeding or continuity between the two categories. More speculation about black people becoming the next hope of America for Trump. And I like what this guy says. Your favorite influencer will never tell you that black people will never vote Republican in any real numbers. It's not happening, folks. because they were sharing this dwindling black support for Biden. 91% black support in 2020 would have converted to 61% support and 20% for Trump. This rarely converts, my friends. Don't put too much hope on the black population. It doesn't take much. Sometimes it takes just a free iPhone to bring them back to the Democrats. And when you consider how better their life was, like how better was life for the working American under Trump. I mean, it was a dream. Salaries were expanding. The economy was all the rage. Everything was going well. The fact that the difference between their lives under Biden and their the lives under Trump only gets 20% of them to side with Trump tells me that there's just no way you're going to win most of this population, no matter how much promises you pour onto them. Forex Shark says, people vote for perceived short-term interest and social pressures. Yes, and I think the black community was a strong target of social pressure. You know how these vote hunters were going around town and knocking on apartment doors and say, this is where you have to vote, sir. And yes, yes, Trump is very evil. These vote harvesters, as documented by Project Veritas and in other ways also. Absolutely disgusting that this exists. There cannot be a neutral and non-invasive approach to voting if it doesn't happen in a standard place where there can be watchers from all parties. Fairness of the vote cannot happen at the apartment door of a block with a specific vote hunter for the Democrats. Go away, says Jeff, but if your cool black friend from college is down with Trump, you will feel more comfortable voting for him yourself. The effect is compounded. That's an interesting theory, that if it is not perceived so much that that black people must have the Democrat Party for their own interest, perhaps there is a kind of relief valve in the white person's brain, the white liberal, a kind of permission to vote for Trump. But, I mean, this lays out a theory that is unproven. You're making shit up. That's the problem. I can't think of this happening in the head of a centrist normie. But the thing is, people who victimize black people so much that they would end up choosing their party aligned with this, I don't see them voting for Trump. I don't see their brainwashing about Trump ever being cleaned by this effect, this hypothetical effect you just described. But it's an interesting psychological theory. Is there something we can do that kind of relieves the white savior effect in the liberal voter? Maybe. You know, maybe if they ended up seeing 20 black people around them all saying, hey, we're voting for Trump, perhaps they would change their view. Speaker's Corner says, Jeff, what are your thoughts on X paying for views? Ultimately, I feel this incentivizes engagement farming and generally people exaggerating and adding additional BS to the platform as people farm for clicks. Better monetization would be the super chat function on live streams, which are apparently on the way. You always have to be careful. Whatever you reward will end up being exploited by engagement farming. But at the same time, people quickly respond to engagement farming and people lose credibility. If your engagement farming is deceptive or driving expectations that don't end up being realized, these systems don't make it for a long time. So yes, we have to be careful, but I'm not fundamentally objected to the system you describe, because eventually if there's someone who drags attention with catchy titles, but then misleads people and doesn't quite deliver on these titles, they end up being snubbed by the internet, and intelligent enough people will be driven away from those engagement farms. So in the end, the system always self-corrects. We don't want to build in an incentive that is fundamentally flawed in the system. But I think that as long as X follows human behavior, as long as X has a way to determine, hey, this guy attracted a lot of clicks, but everyone hated his video, and everyone left this video frustrated, it's fine. But yeah, I agree with you that Super Chats is a absolute genuine, like, proof of work type of system. And you can see it through my shows, you know. We get some trolling happening on the regular chat at times. But generally, someone who invests $3-$5 on a Super Chat is not going to use it as a trolling venue. Less than 1% of the Super Chats I've had in my career were unintelligent trolling that truly makes you lose time, you know. Most of it has something clever. And when you invest $5 in what you have to say, generally it's going to be something of a minimal amount of relevance, you know. Dino Logovich says, Jeff, I will pay good money to ban all MAGA rap songs. Please help. Oh, yeah, I mean, it's a problem. It's rising, this kind of MAGA Christian Christ cuck type of rap. It is cringe, but it's like you have to be tolerant. Please let Papa Jeff talk to you about tolerance. You have to be tolerant of the Christ cuck rapping. Just enjoy the cringe, or just let it be. You know, if it's not your thing, don't listen to it. But yeah, it's going to happen, and you're also going to have hillbilly female, you know, Christian rap type of crap. It's going to happen. Blonde of the Central Americas, you know, type of rap delivery. It's going to happen. You're gonna have to endure it, and just be happy that at least there is this option, you know, for whoever it pleases. Just let it happen. Dr. Peterson says the decision of an Ontario court regarding the allegations levied against me by CP Ontario is due tomorrow. So the psychologist counsel, I stand by what I have said and done and wish them luck in their continued prosecution. They're going to need it. I tweeted and otherwise expressed my opposition to trans surgery butchery. Justin Trudeau and his minions and the lying climate apocalypse mongers. All that's looking pretty good from my end. And if I can't express such opinions in Canada, I will let the world know. I will video record all further hearings and mandatory re-education training courses and broadcast them unedited on YouTube for the world to see. I swear it by all that is holy. So I think that the decision he's talking about is kind of already taken. If I trust what I had read from the Canadian media on this, it looks like they already know it's going to be that he's found to be to not have the right, the free speech right that protects him from being selected out of the psychologist college, the psychology college, College of Psychology, whatever that is. So basically, it boils down to this. You have your free speech right to say, I disagree with those surgeries. But when you're a professional, part of a professional order, you are expected to deliver a standard of care. And the professional order can decide that what you have expressed is threatening your ability to give a fair treatment to a subset of the population, in this case, trans people. And there was also fat people because he had done some fat phobic comment. So again, another Canadian case, just like Gad Saad, where is it censorship? Well, it's not the Canadian government telling you you can't say this. It's the Ontario College of Psychology saying it's like if you had a plumber, okay? Let's take things out of an emotionally salient thing, just to show you my position on this. If you have a plumber, and this plumber believes that you can plug a hex pipe directly to a water heater. So the hex pipe is in plastic, the PEX pipe is in plastic, and the current standard for plumber is to have at least 1 foot long of metal copper tubing from the water heater, because the water heater gives off heat, and the heat could melt the plastic. Imagine that you have a professional order for the plumbers who says that is the standard. 1 foot long of copper tubing from the water heater, period. If you don't install this, you're not in line with our order, and we will remove your credentials of plumber. We will say, okay, you have the freedom to do this in your home for your family, but as soon as you offer plumbing services and you have a little sign that says, I'm a good plumber, you have to give 1 foot long copper tubes for the water heater. Now, is it censorship from the Canadian government if the plumber's order says, well, look, this guy is not a plumber because he installs PEX tubing onto water heaters. They melt. They end up spraying water all over people's floor. It is maybe his professional opinion that it doesn't matter, but to us it matters. And therefore, we declare him not a plumber anymore. Is this a case of censorship? Has someone's professional opinion and free speech rights been violated here? No. No, because the College of Plumbers has the right to free speech also. And their free speech is that you're not a plumber. So it's like, I want a world in which psychologists are free to oppose to the LGBT indoctrination agenda. I want this world. But I don't want a world in which we lie to ourselves about what is a professional order. It is not an attack on your free speech to have a professional order have their standard. If you disagree with the standard of a professional order, your job is to go out of this order, not solicit a status of either psychologist or plumber, and go onto the public space and start a political process of, hey, I'm Jordan Peterson, and I believe there's a different way to approach the question of trans people, and I'd like to freely express my thing on this. But then what I'm delivering is free thought, and it's not psychologist official stamped service. Because then I'm going at odds with my professional order. The same way a plumber who would start wanting to install those PEX pipes onto water heaters would have to go on his own and make that case publicly. And as long as he doesn't succeed at making things move politically, he would be just a crazy plumber going out there on YouTube and just laying out this theory about why the professional order of plumbers is wrong on what they require. So all this to say, I am very sympathetic to Jordan Peterson. I am very sympathetic to giving a counter to the LGBT propaganda. But the fact is that currently the LGBT propaganda has won the institutional race to the point of forcing their standards onto these cocked organisms like the College of Psychology. It is not right to be presenting what's happening there as censorship from the Canadian government. It's not what it is. What it is you lost the institutional war. And the right thing to do in those cases is not to yell censorship, censorship, censorship. The right thing to do is to say, if you truly believe that the trans propaganda right now that's happening is misguided, like I believe so, let them live in their shit. Don't try to correct it. Exclude yourself from the institutional power. Reject institutional power and state publicly, you guys are going to regret it in 20 years from now. Then please come back and see me. But I just feel comfortable with 99% of this program here with Jordan Peterson and what he has to say about it. But let's face it, Jordan Peterson and his ilk, people who believe like him and who believe like me, have lost the institutional war for control of professional orders. And so we are not psychologists anymore. Jordan Peterson is not, and I'm a cognitive psychologist, but I've never been a licensed psychologist, so I'm not either. And the fact is that this entity, the college of whatever, has been taken over by hostile people who have decided to install this as the true standard, this idea that you have to trans people, basically. You have to give gender-affirming care. So be it. Tell them that they're wrong. Tell them as a public man, reserve your freedom for yourself by precisely not soliciting psychology license. Now, it requires to have balls to do this, and it requires to go against the system. And I totally encourage Jordan Peterson to do so. But this is not exactly censorship. This is professional license leverage happening in Canada. And yes, it's bad that professional licenses suck. And this shouldn't happen. There should be no such thing as monopolized professional licensing organizations. Everything about licensing should be consensual and label-based. So basically, you could have a club of psychologists who say, we are the psychologist A. And when you come to a psychologist A, you expect the A type of service. And then there could be another group that says, all right, we are psychologist B. We believe those different things. And it's as you wish. If you come to a psychologist B, you're going to receive that kind of standard. Are you comfortable with it? Well, then you go for it. And then someone gets kicked out of the psychologist B team. He could go solicit a license at the A. He could get denied it at the A. And he could start his own license, psychologist C. We need to hard fork psychology. That is what needs to happen. Ariel Suarez says it in the best terms possible. Free market competition in licensing, JF, absolutely based. Exactly. There should be no one ever kept from delivering a psychology service to someone who consents to it. That is the current state of problem in Canada and in the US. All these professions have been subjected to a cartel. It's not going to work. This cartel is evil. I mean, it's going to converge toward corrupted stuff. But let's face this discussion, Jordan. Rather than build a whole thing around censorship, which it is not, this is professional, unionized cartel leverage of the dirtiest kind. Now, this needs to be combated, but we need the right words to combat it together and to combat it well. Hard fork licensing options. Remove government monopoly over professional licensing. There's no reason the government has to do this. By the way, the private sector has plenty of license-like activities. Think about the organic, for example, organic labels of all kind. You know, this product does not contain GMO. This product is health approved by the health check. And like, it's like, sometimes I see this on fucking vegetable tins. It's like, okay, it's a box of vegetable tins. It's basically wheat flour roasted with flavors of onions. The health check. Okay, what does this health check tells me? Well, it's good for your heart, whatever. Yeah, the kosher tax, the kosher labeling is another example. Totally doable by private agreement. So it's like, okay, if you want kosher food, you trust private companies to organize a labeling system around it, and you trust that you're getting delivered kosher food of a certain standard. If it's important for you, go for it. We could have the same thing. We don't need the government. We don't need a public college of psychology. All we need is a private organization with a checkmark label. And if there's someone out there who doesn't want the service the way Psychologist A provides it, doesn't like Psychologist B, doesn't like Psychologist C, then they're going to end up with the Jordan Petersons of this world, the Psychologist D category. Now, it doesn't have to be D. It could be like the Psychologist of the Sun, the Psychologist of Fire, the Psychologist of the Hurt, the Psychologist of the Void. And you could have badass names for the labels, you know? Justin, a leak has suggested that Elon Musk could turn X into an updated version of PayPal. Well, yeah, I mean, it's where we're... I don't know that this leak is reliable in any way, but it's where we can see it's headed anyway by the public moves of Elon. Elon is interested in payment options. Elon has been talking about crypto. Elon has been a past contributor to PayPal. That's one of the things that he made most money of in his whole life, the idea of PayPal. So Elon has it. Elon probably had his heart broken to see that PayPal didn't become a serious kind of anti-system option. PayPal just maxed out its fees that it takes from users. It started pressing people like a lemon. And at this point, PayPal is undistinguishable from the banks, other than the fact that, yes, they do allow some kind of integration to all websites. You know, little integrations where, okay, it's kind of easy for the webmaster to add PayPal functionality to a website. That's basically it. Other than this, they're basically a bank at this point. So Elon probably has plans for a better future for payments, for allowing better liquidity for the transfers of money. And he's already been searching, trying to acquire licenses for payment processing. So he's definitely headed there. Another unjustified rumor, but it's fun to speculate. Justin, Russian billionaire Yevgeny Prigozhin linked to fifth largest Bitcoin wallet. If that is true, that would be awesome. Because it might mean that Prigozhin dying, he will bring his Bitcoin with him in death. Wouldn't that be awesome if... like just a large amount of Bitcoin has just disappeared. That would lead to less liquidity on the market and a rising price. Every time a Bitcoin holder dies, and especially if it's in surprising circumstances, and if they have not taken the means to transmit their Bitcoin to their family and loved ones, that would be fun. Though, I have no evidence that Prigozhin is the owner of this wallet. And Speaker's Corner says that's the US government wallet related to Bitfinex. See, there are alternative hypotheses. about it. So I wouldn't necessarily trust this. Carlota says, those Bitcoins are in heaven now. Yes, eventually all Bitcoin get paralyzed and crystallized. Eventually, there's not 21 million Bitcoin. Eventually, we're all fighting for 0.001 Bitcoin. That will be amazing. Keep your Bitcoin until then, and you'll be rich. Biden's cringe whiteboard presentation memed into oblivion. So, Biden is pushing this meme that trickle-down economic doesn't work.
I want to share with you my economic vision to grow our economy from the middle out and the bottom up, not the top down.
See, this used to be a sentence of the far left wing of the Democrat Party. You would have these black candidates coming up with this kind of saying, you know, from the inside out and the bottom up. And within a few years, it's taken by the elite of the party, but they're just not doing it in the way that the Marxist expected. So we're still in a very caste-based, elite-controlled economy under the Biden.
Trickle-down economics is the belief that we should cut taxes for the wealthy and big corporations and expect it to trickle down to everyone else, that we should...
It's pretty much the only way that there was ever progress made in America.
Shrink public...
It was rich people saying, okay, now I'm sitting on this big treasury of money. What the fuck am I going to do with this? It's totally useless. Here, let's try to dominate the future. Let's try to use this to go forward into the future and be in demand 30 years from now. Now, certainly, sitting on that money is not the solution. Certainly, I have to throw that money out while people want it so much, and I have to build investment, and I have to prepare myself to respond to future market demand. That is how a nation improves.
Investment in roads, bridges, and water systems, airports, and public education. Well, when put into practice, trickle-down economics failed. It blew up the deficit, increased inequity, and weakened the infrastructure of America.
It is not a failure of trickle-down economics. It is the fact that you injected money artificially into the system. You made it, of course, it won't trickle down when you give it for free from the government. The problem is that the big bottle was not supposed to be a government printing it and literally giving it to rich people. Of course, if you do that, rich people have no interest at serving the bottom. It's when the big bottle has been accumulated by rich people from the free market, from their performance in the free market, and it's when these rich people are convinced that there's not a big old bottle around on top of them that will eventually deliver them free water, that trickle-down economics works. So it's like the rich people in this system, their only way to fructify what they had built is to give back to the people through the responding to demand. The people in your current system, which the Democrats and the Republicans have built, is a system where the big bottle knows very well the way to make money is not to respond to future demand. The way to make money is to lobby the government to just make sure that you will receive more water from the free faucet that the Fed is. That is not a failure of trickle-down economics. It's a failure of your model.
America, and it made it harder for folks to get to the middle class. That's until now.
Oh, because now it's easier to get to the middle class from the bottom of society. You barely can buy a car and have it function at this point from the bottom of society. With the price of gas increasing, the inflation, it's like, no, the middle class is disappearing. There's no evidence that Biden has restored the middle class. If anything, there was a shot at restoring the middle class under Trump, but it wasn't long-lasting enough.
It's about growing the economy by strengthening the middle class and making things in America again. We must make the wealthy pay their fair share.
See, no problem taking back themes from Trump. Is there any evidence that there is an industrial movement toward America right now? I don't see it. I don't see it in the numbers of employment. I don't see a reinvigoration of the industrial means. I don't see a change of the economic balance of the country as a whole with respect to exports.
Sure, not cut taxes for the wealthy. It's about folks who've been calling this Bidenomics, and it's working.
It looks like a little talk for a shitcoin. Bidenomics. Your wealth will grow while you don't even pay attention to it.
Bidenomics has three main pillars: making smart investments in America, educating and empowering American workers, and promoting competition to lower costs.
What happens in reality when you do smart investments in America? You end up having a specialized class of capitalists who can't even produce something that people will need, who don't even have to produce something that is realistically used by anyone. They just have to specialize in making it look to the government like they're producing useful stuff. So they will come to the government and say, hey, we have this new technique to build roofs that produce electricity. So see, it's nice, it's a roof, but it also produces electricity with solar power. And we should have this everywhere. Now, the government funds these things, these smart investments, but some lies have been told in the process. Oh, it's not quite ready to operate on roofs. And oh yeah, it's very hard to build. And oh yeah, you end up pouring so much money that it would actually be cheaper to buy the electricity from the central power plant, wherever that is. And in fact, it's much, much cheaper if that central power plant is powered by coal. And in fact, you're pouring so much money down the production of your solar roofs that, and you're going to have to change them in 10 years because they don't produce as much power, that ultimately you've wasted more energy than you've actually saved with the process. But none of this matters, because you have a system of smart investments. You have a bunch of capitalists who are producing fake roofs for you, basically, that don't work, that are not realistic within the economy of the current time, that are not competitive with what's out there, but they don't care, because for each of these roofs built, it's basically a template that they build for the government to be happy, and then the government pays them. You have accomplished nothing. You have enriched a bunch of roof-building capitalists, but your roofs are useless and no one wants them as long as you don't give them away for free. And then educating and empowering workers, it's the same thing. You have a specialized class of academics who will specialize into making the government believe that what they teach is useful. And they're going to invent as many courses as they need to invent, as long as you pay them to do so. And they're going to convince the government that, in fact, it's so worth it that you should pay for it all. And you should call it loans, call it student loans, and make that money impossible to bankrupt out of existence. So you're going to be sure that people owe you this forever. But you are subsidizing, by doing so, a bunch of teachers, academics, who have not proven their use. They have not proven that their programs respond to a demand of the free market. And these people are ending up producing philosophers and gender studies specialists who are totally unfit for the free market. Just like the roofs, you have produced a very beautiful thing, but that doesn't address a need of the future market. And then promoting competition to lower cost and help small businesses? Bullshit. You don't do this, Biden. You are squashing competition. You've done it in the domain of creativity, for example, with your policies around misinformation and around pursuing creators for their opinions. You are the contrary of competition. You incarnate a cartel approach. That cartel approach has been most visible in the domain of social media, censorship in collaboration with Facebook and Twitter. You don't believe in competition processes. And in fact, in all of these private sector areas, you end up seeing a couple of big players that are friends with the government, that open in ways that are following the standards and the red tape of your government to get the grants. That is not a competitive approach. A competitive approach would be if anyone can create something better, we'll go with them.
Investment in America includes investing in our infrastructure, manufacturing, and clean energy. Our investing in the American agenda is powering resurgence in American manufacturing, bringing investments in good-paying jobs, union jobs, back to America. Companies are investing in America again with over $500 billion in private commitments to rebuild America.
Charge electric chargers with wind power. Where is that happening? I want to know, out of the electric chargers of Tesla in America, how much of them are powered by wind energy that goes straight into the Tesla with solar power roofs. This is not happening. Your Teslas across America are being powered by burning fuel.
America's manufacturing. And now we have a factory building boom. Spending on construction and manufacturing facilities has doubled over the last 2 years.
All artificial money from the government. So you end up having specialists of exploiting the government's desire, delivering the minimal job, and we don't even know if what they're building has demand for it, because we don't know if people are willing to pay for it. We know the government is willing to pay for it and is willing to pay their friends in the construction business.
On my watch, we've created more than 13 million...
Yeah, and the way Biden speaks without moving his lips, I can't do that. That is something that Biden is actually superior at, ventriloquism. I cannot do this. Like, I can't have a little puppet here and,
hello, Jeff, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good. How are you doing, little remote?
I'm doing good. As a remote, I believe that...
I can't. That's my best ventriloquism. Biden is much better on this.
New jobs, including nearly 800,000 manufacturing jobs. Second, educating and empowering American workers about increasing wages. More Americans joining the workforce. Educating and training workers. Supporting unions. We've already reached unemployment at near historic lows. We're providing education and training opportunities to workers, and we're making it easier to join a union. And third, promoting competition to lower costs for Americans help small business.
Yeah, bullshit. They're not doing this third point. Anyways, generally, economy under the Democrats, I mean, what's lacking in all this board? It's like, okay, this is your ideology. This could have been a good campaign speech. It's what you want to do. But the results of what you're doing is a terrible economy, high inflation. People have less money and less purchasing power under Biden, high unemployment. We're definitely, like, Trump looks like a golden era under Biden in terms of numbers. So what's missing is, if you think that all of this delivers, you should have numbers to show up for. You should have numbers about the purchasing power of people. Those numbers are negative for you. You should have numbers for unemployment. Those numbers are negative for you with respect to Trump. I Hypocrite says almost no more white NYC cab drivers, but blacks still can't catch a ride. When blacks are not getting picked up, the drivers passing them by are not white racist. They are mostly Indian and or Pakistani men, and very few women, men of color. What gives? Wait until the left realizes that that Indian people do not consider themselves brown, basically. It's like, oh yeah, in your anti-racist, white liberal, fictive universe that you've created in your head, there's people of all shades, and you know, we really can't make the difference between brown from India and brown from North Africa. I mean, it's all the same thing. Well, I have some bad news for you. You know, those people who do race denial, you want to cradle yourself into the delusion that race doesn't exist. And you guys, for the purpose of denying race, you've been deceiving yourself into thinking that brown is brown. You know, I can't tell the difference between a Pakistani brown and a Morocco brown. It's all the same thing, but it's not the same thing. And the very people you're trying to defend with this anti-racist ideology, they're more racist than even me. Like they're more racist than the white racialists who are trying to convince you that, races do exist. And so they're going to be faced with a bunch of Muslims who consider themselves very much Arab, and a bunch of Indians who consider themselves very much Indians, and a bunch of East Asians who consider themselves very much East Asians, and a bunch of mixed-race African-Americans, slightly diluted in white Europeans, that consider themselves really very black. And all of these people, despite the fact that they might at some point have the skin of the same shade of brown, they will all know very well that they are different from each other. And your Indian, your regular Indian taxi driver is going to tell you, I don't want these people in my car. Well, and the white liberal is confused. What's happening here? It's like they're seeing something that doesn't exist. Well, what's happening is that races exist. They're seeing it. And in fact, they're more racist than us, than the people you think are the most dangerous people on Earth. White, extremist, alt-right people. Dead Star says, any guesses why my woke commie siblings feel the need to disown my conservative father? Sure, he wasn't around much growing up, but he isn't a horrible guy. How big of an issue is this societally? It is a big issue. It is a very common thing for a leftist revolt to be combined with teenager revolt, to be combined with young adult migration away from the family, and to be involved in a kind of dismissal of everything that the father figure is. It is the main mode of leftist small internal revolution. It is a way that your sibling is currently using to cognitively structure himself to be more cityphile and more like, oh yeah, I come from this place of bigots and I come from this place of a very bad father. And it leads to extremism in the wokeism. It leads people to adhere to wokeism more than they would naturally. Because it's kind of you want to do a clean break, and the leftists want to use their stories of coming from bigotry so that they can interface with what they perceive as the more promising new world of the leftist city. So they're going to be very very explicit about it. Your sibling is going to lay it out to his new friends. Oh yeah, my father is such a bigot, such a racist, so that they can get included in the new club. And by doing so, they're dismissing the wisdom of the tradition before them, and they are being driven toward dangerous lifestyles for themselves. Speaker's Corner says, Jeff, if you had to make a homemade mouthwash, what ingredients would you use? I would want to give you a couple of ideas that stem to mind, but actually I would be worried that me giving you any counsel, you would exaggerate them into something that ultimately is dangerous for you. And you would then have legal claims against me. So I will tell you, just buy your mouthwash at the store. Huh. See, that was a close one. You almost got me. You tempted me, but I saw you coming with your curveball question. Someone exchanged this with me, explaining the irony compass. It was a video by JREG. I thought I had already commented on this video, but now that I've rewatched it, it wasn't this video that I commented about, it was this video. So in this video, my commentary on this was that it's very interesting. And that was a very interesting laying of how the irony layers between sincerity, irony, and then meta-irony relate to each other. That is the right video to watch. This video, I've now watched it. It's absolute crap. It's disorganized stuff. See, even his definitions of meta-irony aren't even compatible with his older video. See here, he classifies meta-irony as being contradicting to post-irony, and where the form of the meme is the target, whereas when it's not the form of the meme that's the target, it becomes post-irony. There is no such distinction. JREG is sitting like a Buddhist monk in front of a transparent background explaining this crap like he knows anything about it. No, it's like this is a guy who memed on a very interesting video back 3 years ago that was truly giving insight on actual definitions of meta-irony. And now he's just chilling like the fucking hippie that he is and speculating about loose definitions of post-irony and meta-irony and doing it in a totally disorganized way. Fuck this video, which he published 2 days ago. Fuck is lack of insight. Fuck is misguiding of the audience into thinking that this was as good as what he did 3 years ago. Fuck this entire video. Eminem and his legal team have been asking Vivek Ramaswamy to stop using his music as a performance item on the campaign trail. Here we can see Vivek was rapping to the Eminem song from 8 Mile, Lose Yourself. This is kind of a cognitive test that is interesting. You know, the fact that Biden couldn't rap this is kind of interesting to know. It should guide people. Like, personally, I see him deliver those bars, and I'm like, okay, we have a high IQ, cognitively dare type of person. But the reality is you shouldn't be rapping into that much detail on a campaign trail. It is very ill-advised to do so. As people say, cringe core, lame. Yeah, it sucks. It's not a good idea, because the reality is not everyone is an IQ seeker like me. Like, whenever I encounter someone or when I evaluate someone who's speaking, like, I'm scanning for IQ cues. And the fact of being able to deliver Eminem bars gives you a certain threshold in my IQ estimation of you. But the reality is, for most normies, it's just like, okay, this guy is just way too into it. Like, he knows the fucking lyrics to Lose Yourself.
Never heard it.
So at this point, Eminem took offense and he has sent a cease and desist letter demanding he stop rapping his music on the campaign trail. Dear Mr. Roberts, this letter serves as notice to you pursuant to the BMI music license for political entities that BMI has received a communication from Marshall B. Mathers, professionally known as Eminem, objecting to the Vivek Ramaswamy campaign's use of Eminem's musical compositions, the Eminem Works, and requesting that BMI remove all Eminem works from the agreement. As such, pursuant to paragraph 2A of the agreement, this letter serves as notice that the Eminem works are excluded from the agreement effective immediately. BMI will consider any performance of the Eminem works by the Vivek 2024 campaign from this date forward to be a material breach of the agreement, for which BMI reserves all rights and remedies with respect thereto. So you wonder why we don't have free-thinking artists? They're all consolidated under this BMI, Broadcast Music Incorporated. It's like, it's not even Eminem threatening to sue Vivek Ramaswamy. It's Eminem saying to BMI, hey, I take issue with these particular politics. Could you please threaten to sue them? And BMI does it. So, yeah, I mean, people don't own themselves in this world of music production. And it's so sad because once you own yourself, like I own myself in terms of books, you have so much more liberty. You have given yourself the means to be free, to be able to speak free. You don't have a boss that can tell you, oh yeah, we're going to deny, we're going to stop marketing your book. When you own yourself and you own your own products, you don't have to ask permission to a middleman, which is what Eminem has done here. Yeah, so I think that Vivek will have to stop using it. Now, Aristophanes had a funny meme. Because Vivek Ramaswamy says, the truth is God is real. That shouldn't be a taboo thing to say. God need not be a four-letter word. Believing in something higher than ourselves is unifying. In fact, we hunger for it. And Aristophanes asks the question, which God, Vivek? I said, which one, Vivek? Why won't you eat a cheeseburger, Vivek? Oh my god. Yeah. So I didn't know. Vivek refuses to eat cheeseburgers. Is Vivek a vegetarian, vegan, or something like this? I didn't know. But yeah, which god? It matters. Edenman says, hey Jeff, what are your thoughts, if any, on the cryptocurrency Cardano? Its founder, Charles Hoskinson's libertarian views are much aligned with yours, I would think. Yeah, I've heard some very good things around Cardano, and I've seen people tell me, JF, you should buy Cardano, and I didn't buy it, and Cardano rose in price. So it's like, yeah, do your crypto stuff, bro. But I'm not going to buy Cardano, because of all this, across the years, all of these times, people have told me, Jeff, you have to buy Cardano. I still haven't been explained by a single one person what the fuck is Cardano offering that's unique. I don't know of anything that's unique that Cardano offers. As far as I can tell, there are Ethereum blockchain knockoffs that are more performant, that are cheaper. And so it's like, why does Cardano exist? I'm not going to buy Cardano as long as one of you don't explain it to me. And even then, I might not buy Cardano. It's, and this whole Mexican name to it, it's like, no, if it ends in O, I'm not buying. I've been betrayed once by the Mexican mafia. Let me tell you the days when Papa JF was betrayed by something that ended, that had an O in it, And since then, I've not been trusting anything that starts or ends with O. There was back in the days of the early internet. Here I'm gonna sit comfortably for story time. There was a very promising technology. It was called Omemo. O-M-E-M-O. And it was supposed to be this super decentralized hard drive. And I was like, holy shit, Omemo. Omemo. And it was like back in the days of the transition away from Napster, because Napster was kind of in trouble and there were torrents rising also in parallel. And Omemo was supposed to be this decentralized system where you would get 20 copies of every file onto people's hard drive. People would volunteer away hard drive space. I don't know, they would be rewarded maybe with something, or maybe they wouldn't be rewarded. There was no Bitcoin back then. It was really a volunteer network would develop for full hosting of hard drive space. And because of the system of copies, if five copies would shut down their computer, they would make sure that, oh, we're going to find five new people to host this file. And you would have decentralized, uncontrollable, uncensorable hosting happening. Now, I don't know, does it still exist? Omemo. No, see, I Google Omemo and it's about multi-end message encryption of objects. It has nothing to do with the project I'm referring. End-to-end encryption for chat privately, Omemo Instant Messenger. So basically, the whole project has disappeared from the internet. And I didn't learn much lessons from the Omemo failure, other than when it sounds Mexican, don't trust it. So that's the story of why Cardano I will never buy, most likely. I can't. It ends in O. BJ Investment Holdings, the parent company of Hit Network, took decisive legal action in removing Ben Armstrong from the company, and specifically the BitBoy crypto brand. This difficult decision is a culmination of a prolonged effort to help Ben during his relapse into substance abuse, as well as reconcile the emotional, physical, and financial damage he has done to the employees of Hit Network and the BitBoy crypto community. So apparently this guy was just too high on crack or whatever, and it was breaking the community. Someone says, can you show us the X chart, JF? Hex. I haven't been looking into it for a while. Oh, well, see, I thought it would be all negative, but it's been rising 10% in the last day. SEC case, Richard Hart. So X has been coming back to 0.004. Mostly very negative. is there any hope for X coming out of this slumber? I have no clue. I have no clue. But I have never invested more than $40 in X. So it's like at some point it was thousands of dollars and I didn't withdraw. The only thing I regret is I should have withdrawn. But I don't care. I don't care. It was $40. If you've been balls deep into Hex like our friend Steven Robinson, I pity you, my friend. I hope that you're doing okay, because I don't think that Hex can recover such harassment by the SEC. Maybe in many years from now, but you know, there's so many new cryptos. It's very hard to believe that these, many of these cryptos will even have two lives. I expect many of these cryptos will just have one boom up and then will flatten into nothingness. The complicated mess to restart student loan payments is on purpose. President Biden does not want student loan payments to start. The easiest is to make it an understaffed, complicated mess. So you have the Supreme Court who has decided, no, Biden, you have to get these students to pay their loans. And Biden used the executive strategy of, oh, well, it's very hard to restart the loan programs. You know, we're very bad at this. And it's like an absolute dishonest strategy to basically walk around what the law obligates him to do and say, oh, well, sorry, we couldn't get that money. It's really hard to find these students and force them to repay. They're not even trying because that's what they want. They want to favor the people on their side and the students. They're all from universities and they're all leftist. China just announced some massive tax cuts. This new policy cuts taxes on stock trading by 50%. The last time this happened in 2008. So it's interesting as a similarity because yesterday we saw there is resemblance between the 2008 before the real estate crisis in terms of the value of homes is overdriven. Irrealistically high with respect to the average pay. And it's funny that China is adopting the exact same strategy that they had in 2008, which makes me think, is it possible that this kind of strategic play by China may eventually cause a house crash in the US? Maybe. I don't know exactly how it works, this tax on stock trading. I don't know exactly what are the consequences of it on the Chinese market and on the outside of the Chinese market. People were speculating in the Twitter thread that this will result in basically China exporting its deflation, China bringing the whole market into deflation around the world. John Drake says, China needs to prop up the stock market. The country is deflationary. It's very hard for me to understand all of the complex geopolitical consequences, but I'm reading the speculations and I'm observing the situation closely. We'll see what it leads to. A man who was a SF Fed bank supervisor retires. He had a significant supervisory failure when, under his watch, the SVB bank collapsed. People are noting this in Zero Hedge. Prigozhin's death confirmed by DNA testing. Again, that doesn't tell us much about. Why did his plane blow up and who ordered the blowing up? And big government raids a small town Amish farm. This guy has been harassed for a long time. This Amish farmer who's selling a lot of meat locally. And you can see the government letters when they came to seize all of the meat that he had accumulated in freezers. Uninspected, misbranded beef, skirt steak, liver, kneecaps, kidney, soup bones, neck bones. It's like, this guy should be allowed to keep this. He should be allowed to sell this. This is another case, just like we were talking about psychology colleges and Jordan Peterson. This is another case of a monopoly of licensing. It's the government deciding that your way of handling meats is not in line with their standard, but their standard forces you to deal with the local slaughterhouse. And basically, their standard is an indirect way to impose a local cartel of meat processing. And you end up losing a lot of value of your meat because you have to hire the slaughterhouse by a fee to get the meat processed, when in fact you may have this knowledge yourself. But they make it illegal to process the meat on the farm where it is raised. We need to abolish those monopolies. That is it for tonight, Buzz. Thank you very much for being with me, and I'll be back tomorrow. Oh yeah, I had forgotten. I had seen the super chat of Shrigma Mail, and I was actually excited to go to it to see what is current status with the Charming of Woman. But somehow it had escaped my mind because I was answering to other people on the regular chat. So Shrigma Mail has sent $5. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, "Jeff, my ex reversed her decision to return with me. So I'm going on a date with the girl I just DM'd you on my account." Okay. Well, it's fascinating. Your ex wanted to go back with you and changed her mind. I mean, they're so flimsy. These fucking women, fucking modern women, are a fucking problem. But hey, this is a beautiful girl. Long hair, beautiful long hair. I'm not going to show her because Shringmamed is going to be in trouble if I show her. She's not as beautiful as your ex, but she's totally fine, and super long hair, that is something rare these days. And so go for it and fuck these flimsy, unstable woman. Like, she was coming back for you like 2 days ago. What the fuck? Thank you.